Welcome to Booked, the programme that dances a wild square dance across the written and spoken word. Today we're in Bermuda. Well, Jersey, actually, but a tax haven anyway. We're guests at the Jersey International Arts Festival. Yes, we're big. And to celebrate our bigness, I've written a small poem, a haiku. It's called Ian McMillan on an Aeroplane in Leeds. Get a laugh with the title, that's good. Behind me in the queue, the woman says, "Hellfire, it's got propellers." Yeah, I think that's got a certain sort of sequel. And our panellists today, our regulars, Miles Kington and Dilly Keane. And competing for the Jumper International Arts Festival jersey, Mark Thomas and new boy John Hegley, the most famous poet in glasses since T.S. Eliot. So let's come out of the tunnel to the roar of the crowd and onto the pitch to play our first round, Literary Addresses. Each panellist will find a pack of cards in front of them. Each card has written upon it the name of a literary address. All you've got to do is describe what's on the card so the others guess it. You can only pass on one, and you've only got a minute. Mark and John, off you go.
Right. It's a big building and people hide in it and it's sort of fortified. It's a fortified
Fort
building.
Fort Knox.
No. It's a kind of like British. It's a British place. It's British, marvellous, it's large.
Fort Knox, London.
No. Lots of people fire bows and arrows. Pour molten lava on people.
It's a castle, isn't it?
Yes, it is. But it's belonged to Oxbridge. It's all sort of like, you know, rhyming.
You can pass on one.
Can I pass on one? Right. Right. Yes, now this one. This is a sort of geometric thing. And it's not a circle.
The Pentagon.
No.
30 seconds.
Yeah, we haven't got one yet. It's got right angles. Four right angles, John. And
the cube.
Four, yes. And it's a place, isn't it? You know, if you go into a place and it's got four right angles, you're in a thingy, aren't you?
No, you're losing me.
You want to go. You want to go now.
Right, yeah, Mark.
No, hang on. I've got one for you. I can do this one.
Go on, Ed.
This is a TV thing, and on the thing, right, there's loads of characters who go, cookies.
Sweet shop of sorts. Biscuit shop. Biscuit tin.
A, B, the letter.
You're 1 minute up, I'm afraid. You're 1 minute up, and you scored. No points. But never mind.
Can I just say it was Sesame Street?
Yes.
All right.
All right, then. Right, Miles and Dilly, it's all to play for.
Me.
Oh, house. I dreamt I was back at...
Mandalay.
Yes.
Ooh, ah.
God.
Ooh. It's from the comic where there are very ugly children and they...
Bastards.
Yes, Marvel.
it's another Jane Austen. Oh, my God. It sounds like a football team, but in fact it's a large open square where cows...
30 Austin seconds.
Park.
No.
It's something park, isn't it?
Yes, it is.
Oh,
it is.
Pass. It's Dickens, and it's terribly dreary sounding.
Bleak House.
Yes, Marvel.
Right, it's the little things that poke forward on top of a roof, and they're coloured vermilion.
Red turrets.
No.
The Red Tower.
I'm afraid your time's up.
Gables.
Grey Gables. It's the Archers.
Anne of Grey Gables.
What was it really?
Anne of Green Gables.
Green Gables.
Vermilion green.
Oh, right. Yes.
Never mind. And now, beginnings and endings. Our Fab Four mop-tops retune the treble and bass and come up with new beginnings and endings parodying a writer or a book. Miles, your book was The Three Musketeers by Alexandre Dumas, a famous story of swashbuckling, adventure, mail bonding and tights.
Yeah, I didn't read that far. Right, this is how it starts. "So, what are we to call ourselves?" cried Athos, casually lunging at a passing member of the Cardinal's Guard. "Well, the Three Musketeers, of course," cried Porthos. "That's what we've always been called." "But there are four of us now," said Aramis. "Now that we've got D'Artagnan with us, we are the Four Musketeers." "We can't call ourselves the Four Musketeers," growled Porthos. "We've always been known as the Three Musketeers. We can't change our name now. It would confuse our followers. It would ruin our whole marketing strategy. We'd have to change all our stationery, all our T-shirts." "I know," cried young D'Artagnan. "Let us call ourselves D'Artagnan and the Three Musketeers." No, cried Athos. "That would give quite the wrong impression of you being our leader." "Well," said D'Artagnan, "how about the Three Musketeers starring D'Artagnan?" "No," they all roared. The noise attracted the attention of two passing police sergeants. They came over to see what was going on. Aramis killed them. "All right," said D'Artagnan, "how about the Three Musketeers introducing D'Artagnan?" "No, You see, explained Porthos, it is wrong to give anyone the star billing. Can you think of any group where one person had the star billing? Yes, said D'Artagnan. Diana Ross and the Supremes. I do not know them, said Athos. Are they good fighters? The argument looked as if it was going to go on for a long time. End of the book. All right, said D'Artagnan. Practicing his sword work on a passing nun. How about calling ourselves D'Artagnan and the Temptations? That's ridiculous, said Athos, finishing the nun off with a swift lunge. You might as well call ourselves the Magnificent Three. Magnificent Four, said D'Artagnan. I have a counter-suggestion, said Aramis, poking the eye out of an insolent man-at-arms. What about Smoky Aramis and the Miracles? That's stupid, said Porthos, aiming a playful stab at a passing priest. Killing him. The Three Musketeers ride again, said Athos. Four, said D'Artagnan. Five, said a young voice behind them. They looked round. It was a bright-eyed young Gascon on horseback. I have come to join your company, he said. D'Artagnan, Athos, Porthos and Aramis looked at each other. They all nodded. They knew what had to be done. They drew their swords, leapt on the young man, and killed him.
And John Hegley, you've got Rip Van Winkle by Washington Irving. The story of a man who falls asleep for 100 years, wakes up and has to go straight to the toilet. Wakes up and the story follows his life in a world 100 years on. John.
Rip Van Winkle, rewritten. The job of the poet, the recreation of language, the recreation of language. Poetry can be fun, but not today. Actually, I just noticed that one of my braces just pinged off there. That moment, it's absolutely true. I was going to leave it out, but it's true. So here is a story that's not very deep, and hopefully no one will go off to sleep while I'm telling the tale of a chap whose name's Rip Van Winkle, the king of the nap. Rip had a dog and a beard on his chin and a home by the Hudson, and this was all in the America under the Union flag, where Rip was united to one who could nag like the business of nobody else in the world. The abuse that he got, the abuse that she hurled, and the ending. He'd gone with a stranger down into a cleft, and he'd drunk something strange, and the stranger had left, and Rip had a kip by the side of the rock. A shame he'd forgotten to bring his alarm clock. His beard was all long and his life was all old, and hobbling down to the town he was told that the union with Britain was over and done, and so was the one with his wife who'd burst a blood vessel during an argument with a travelling salesman.
Dilly, we gave you the luckiest girl in the school. One of 50 school novels written by Angela Brazil, or Brazel, which emphasises hearty games playing and wistly describes a utopian world for young gals. Dilly.
Gladys Winterbottom was practising Yorkers in the fourth form of St. Bottles. Gosh, isn't it ripping to be back at St. Bottles, she yelped. It's not that I don't love practising at Nets every single summer day with my bro, but there's nothing quite like winter term at jolly old school. She frowned momentarily, her arm stopping mid-throw. Besides, my cricketing days are almost over. Reggie says he'd still rather have me in the field than any of the chaps. But my burgeoning breasts are wreaking havoc with my bowling. Never mind old pipsqueak, said Marjorie Drinkwater, banging the blackboard rubber enthusiastically with her ruler. We've got a whole year in Miss Lesbot's class. Too thrilling. I wonder what the new girls are going to be like, said Elsie Corker, as she lovingly oiled her lacrosse stick. I say, said Prudence Peabody, there's three arriving right now. The four chums gazed out of the window. There in the drive was a large black chauffeur-driven car, and standing beside it were three girls in pink net dresses, wearing sunglasses with fuchsia polka dot bows on their heads. With them was a blonde woman dressed exactly the same.
Bye, darlings, cried the odd woman. Daddy gets custody on alternate Saturdays. We both love you, so does Uncle Michael. Mustache. Got to get to the gig. Moments later, the four pals stood staring at the three strange girls. What are your names? Said Prudence. I'm Pansy Bell Pixikins, said the oldest girl, and these are my two sisters, Honey Bunny Snuggle Fairy and Peachy Bottom Pom Pom. How frightfully rum, said Elsie. Are you keen on lax? Well, said Pansy Bell Pixikins, Daddy says Mummy's very lax. I can see we're going to have to take you lot in hand, glowered Gladys. Miss Lesbot isn't going to like this one bit. It ends a year later. Three little girls in sensible plaits and flatties walked along platform 19 at Victoria Station. They were so excited to be going back to their beloved St. Botolph's again after a long and boring holiday spent smoking spliffs in the back of a tour bus. Wouldn't you prefer to go back in Uncle Michael's stretch limo, Pansy Bell Pixikins? Said Mummy, plaintively, feeling uncomfortable in a nice beige two-piece from Debenhams. No, mate, it's frightfully showy, said Pansy Bell Pixikins. All the really top hole girls go by train, and please don't call us those silly names anymore, she added. From henceforth, we will be known as Jean, Joan and Jane. Suddenly, Jean, Joan and Jane stopped dead in their tracks. A wild redhead was kissing two children goodbye. All three were wearing orange diamante tulle frocks. Bye, darlings, cried the redhead. I'll come and see you very soon with Uncle Thomas or Uncle Brian or even Uncle Steve. Uncle someone, anyhow. Perhaps even Uncle Daddy. Bye, must go shopping. What are your names? Said Jean, Joan and Jane to the two girls. Beatrice and Eugenie, said the bigger girl. I can see we're going to have to take you two in hand, glowered Jean. Miss Lesbot isn't going to like this one bit.
So, Mark, what are your new beginnings and endings?
Well, what happened was I said, would you find beginnings and endings for Burke's Peerage? Which I thought would just be great, because just beginning of Burke's Peerage would just be... and the end would be... and you have to do. But I actually came up with P.G. Woodhouse, My Man Jeeves, and as you know, those of you who managed to get the smuggled-in copies of The Guardian in Jersey... That Woodhouse has just been in a spot of trouble over certain right-arm tendencies he had during the war. But this is My Man Jeeves. Jeeves surveyed his master's bedchamber and sighed. Clothes lay strewn across the room and a pair of boots protruded from the bottom of the sheets. Good morning, sir, said Jeeves with calculated loudness. Or should I say, heil now. A sleepy right-arm salute extended from underneath the bed covers and flopped an effete little upright. Yes, heil, Jeeves, yes, heil. I was just wondering, sir, mused Jeeves to the befuddled hangover that employed him. Your new friends, sir, they're Nazis, aren't they, sir? Oh, absolutely, everyone's a Nazi these days. It's the fashion, Jeeves, and they are the master race. I dare say they are, sir. And the Nazis have got the trains running on time, which is no doubt more than ample reason to invade Poland, I suppose, sir. I was really wondering if you were doing any damage to your reputation by associating with them. Good golly, Jeeves. Do you think I've got a reputation? That's the beginning. The ending. Things really had reached rock bottom and he felt like a scoundrel. Oh, well, he thought, things can only look up from now on in. Just then, Jeeves's gentle cough announced his presence. Someone to see you on business, sir. A Mr. Lloyd Webber. Send him in. Things can't get much worse.
Right now, sound effects. A simple and beautifully composed round. I'm going to play some sound effects, which make up the title, or the feel, or the plot of a book. All you've got to do is guess what it is, and listen carefully, because all the sounds are relevant. Mark and John first.
Who shall say that love is cruel? I do guard it as a jewel. Oh, what if love do bring me sorrow? Love today!
On earth that was. So what we've got is a sort of French cafe kind of music thingamabob, and then a woman who obviously can't sing very well singing, and then time passes because we had a clock, which obviously is the great audio clue there.
It's a special kind of clock, though.
Oh, is it?
Yeah.
Is
it's a clock that somebody might use if they wanted you to go into a trance.
Ah, right, so a hypnotist fob watch. A little stop watch.
Yeah.
So, French woman... can't sing, gets hypnotised, can sing, bloke who hypnotised her dies, and she goes back to being a crap singer.
That's the plot. And the name of the book is the same as the name of a hat.
It's the name of a hat?
Yes.
Bobble?
I think the audience knows.
I don't. Is it Trilby?
Trilby, yes. It was by Georges Dumouriez.
Was it really?
Oh, yes.
I'll have to read that then.
All right, Miles and Dilly, here's one for you.
Organ playing Bach.
Yeah, and horrid laughter. I think it's Phantom of the Opera.
No.
Well, that's taken the smug smile off my face.
20,000 Leagues Under the Sea.
You're right.
Oh.
Wow. And now a new round. Jump in the plot. Characters from one story jump into the plot of another. Hup! Simple as that. What our panellists have to do is imagine how the characters from these two plots would get on and what they'd get up to. So, John, who jumped plot into where for you?
Right. This is the Nigel Molesworth crew going to Andy McNab's Bravo or Bravo 2-0 book.
Right.
And Mark is going to play Galahad. Aren't you, Mark?
Yes, I'm looking forward to it. Mm.
Mission accomplished. The units have duffed plenty foreigners' tanks in, tuffed up them. Feeling, please. Mm. But foreign tank owners, not please. They in hot pursuit. They follow trail of chewed up licorice wood, which units have left. Units have blown up big bridge, but timing wrong, and foreigners have got over bridge before big explodes. They chase through woods and swamp-like terrain, but unit kept ahead. Friendly lines in view now. Only one small feld left to cross. Unfortunate, it is minefeld. Now red on. Listen, Galahad, sir. I think it's a bit silly we walk through minefeld.
You think too much. We not walk through minefeld?
No.
No, you walk through minefeld.
Sir, why me? Why not Fotherington Thomas?
Because he hath not had special SAS training in minesweeping.
Nor me.
But you about to get it.
Why me?
Because I love Fotherington Thomas and him no good to me in bits. Molesworth?
Sir?
Go, Molesworth.
Sir, I'll give you a kiss.
No, thank you. Go.
Sir, please.
Go.
No.
Go.
All right.
Hold on, Molesworth.
Oh, thank him, sir. Oh, thank him.
Hand over licorice wood rations before go.
There you are, sir.
Is that all?
Oh, that's all.
Now go.
Please, sir.
Go.
Sir, I can't.
What you mean?
I got him in trousers. I got him there.
No blubbing in unit. Off go.
So I change first. I need new trousers. I've got new trousers.
No matter. You about to meet Maker.
He made it get...
Go, Molworth. Think of extra health points I give you. And so him go tippy-tippy tentatively.
Sir, I done it! I done it!
Yes, but you forgot to mark out trail for us to follow. Come back and do again.
Oh!
Right, Dilly, who were your jumpers?
I've got Myra Ward, the heroine of Marilyn French's searing novel, The Woman's Room, The Women's Room, going into Wind in the Willows. And I'd like Miles to play Toad.
And so, in summation, it only remains for me to say, in conclusion to this, my first speech of the evening, that we're all tremendously chipper to have Toad Hall back in safe hands.
Right.
I would like to ask you now to charge your glasses.
Ah.
And raise a toast.
Excuse me.
And raise a toast to all the stout
fellows. I said, excuse me.
Madam, I am speaking. This is a boys' own meeting. Who are you?
Myra Ward, Muz to you.
Well, Muz Ward, would you kindly remove your inconveniently feminine personage from this hall?
Now, look here. I have a booking for Toad Hall, and I can't find anyone in reception.
A booking?
Yes, sirree, Bob, for the annual women's conference.
Really?
Yes. We're due to hold a seminar this evening on leg waxing, the politics of depilation, and should women be sensitive about facial hair. Then, tomorrow, a lecture on Betty Crocker entitled Betty, the Kitchen is a Woman's Theater, and followed by an organic lunch, and then after which we will spend the afternoon at demonstrations and workshops on self-examination with speculum.
Who are you, by golly?
And that's not all.
No, there must be some mistake.
Are you the owner of that red sports car outside?
I certainly am, madam.
I thought so. Boy, do you need help. You should come to our evening session on impotence and sexual inadequacy. In amphibians who drive phallic substitutes.
I'm beginning to think I preferred the weasels.
So if you wouldn't mind clearing out so that we can get on with putting out the chairs.
Putting out the chairs? How many of you are there?
Why, 300.
Oh, no. Oh, dear, well, I fear there's nothing for it but to give in to superior forces. Come along, lads, let's go into the woods and bang a few drums.
Right, Mark, who mingles for you?
Ah, well, now this is a sweary bit. What happened here was the cast and of Train Spotting somehow slipped into Pride and Prejudice. and in this, Dilly is Elizabeth, and John is Darcy, and I am one of the cast of Train Spotting.
Mr. Darcy.
Elizabeth. You must excuse the lateness of our visit. We were merely passing by on our search for your sister, and on encountering such a storm as this, thought we might prevail upon your hospitality. If our imposition upon you is not too great, we shall be on our way.
You must stay, both of you. I shall send for what food and drink we have for you and your friend.
I thank you most kindly, as does my friend. Please allow me to introduce my very good friend, Sick Boy.
A pleasure to meet you, Sick Boy. Any friend of Mr. Darcy's is welcome in our home.
Nice one. Ah, this house is brilliant.
We are but poor cousins to Mr. Darcy's circle of friends, but it is a pleasing home.
I wonder if we might return Jane's favour to us by offering her some skag. I believe you are holding, Sick Boy.
Yeah, right, it's down my kicks. Do you mind if I just fish it out?
I have no objection, but what is skag?
Heroin, smack.
Oh, I'll wager everyone in London circles is doing this skag.
And now, if I may, dear lady, the works. Tie this rubber hose around your arm like so, and pull if you would flex your arm.
I am sure the protrusion of one's veins is not a ladylike quality I would wish to cultivate.
I now draw back and depress the plunger.
Darcy, man, I've scored! The mother is rampant. I'll see you later.
Thank you.
And finally, Miles, who are your gate crushers?
Well, this is an addict of a previous generation. It's Billy Bunter, who I've introduced into the last scene of Hamlet. Lily's doing Hamlet and Queen Gertrude, which has never been done before. My Lady Gertrude, may I have your ear?
Who dares to interrupt our revelry as all the Danish royal court here gathered prepares to watch my son, the princely Hamlet, engage in swordplay with his friend Laertes? Who are you, and what is it you want?
You're all guard, Your Majesty, with a prisoner. We found this trespasser in the royal palace, stealing food inside the royal kitchens. Yaru, let go my ear! That hurts!
What is your name, you walking bowl of grease?
Bunter. Billy, to his friends.
A boy like you can boast of having friends.
Oh, yes. Whene'er my post order comes.
You walking sausage, lump of lard on legs. You frightful football, spherical like the moon. It makes me thirsty just to look at you. Hand me a glass of wine to slake my thirst.
Oh, yes, yes, of course. Whatever you say. Oh, here's one that someone's left behind them in the sun.
Thank you, fat Bunter. So, let me drink your health.
Alas, you wretch! You now have killed the queen. You gave her the glass with poison, meant for Hamlet.
Oh, no, I never meant I didn't know. I mean, I never would have meant to kill the queen.
And here comes Hamlet, her son, across the ring. I wouldn't be in your shoes for anything.
Oh, Lord. Yaru, oh, crumbs, my dizzy goat. I best leave now. You couldn't lend me a groat.
Alas, O heavens, what is this I see? The queen, my mother, dead. Who did it?
He.
Him? The fat boy? Then I shall run him through if I can find a sword long enough so to do.
Oh, here's a sword, your madge. It's lying here. I'm sure that you can borrow it, never fear. No, not that end. Take hold of the other.
Ah!
Oh, dear. He's dropped dead, like his mother. You fool! That sword is poisoned on the tip. It was meant to pierce young Hamlet in the hip.
Oh, Lord. I'm very sorry. So I am.
And so you should be. Guards, arrest this man.
And finally, let's flip to the back page, to the small ads, to Lonely Hearts. Literary characters meeting each other through the personal ads. You know the sort of thing. Will it to me? Guess it are her. Pos 121. No TVs. Nis at the Miles, what have you got?
Quasimodo. Hunchback, passionately interested bell ringing, wishes to meet female similar. Failing that, I'd like to show the sights of Paris to a leggy blonde air stewardess, preferably Swedish.
Right, John, what have you got?
Fred Flintstone. Fancy a Zabba-Dabba-Doo time? Thought that'd go better than that. Neanderthal guy seeks old-fashioned gal for extramarital affair. Send cave painting.
Mark?
I've got Pinocchio. Lederhose-wearing puppet boy seeks good fairy for fun and mutual polishing. No strings but plenty of handcuffs. You want a big guy? Make me tell you lies.
Well, it's time to finish now, so here's a short poem called End of a Quiz. End of a quiz, like end of your first communion, lips all wet and a slight sense of giddiness. So, it just remains for me to thank Mark Thomas, John Hegley, Miles Kington and Dilly Keane. Booked was researched by Kate Withers, devised and produced in Bristol by Mark Yops, and presented by me, Ian McMillan. Goodbye. Thank you.